of thought here. Text 16. We're going to be discussing action, inaction, so forth. This is a difficult subject matter. Krishna himself says it's difficult, but it is necessary to master if you're going to understand what's going on with existence. Now, the first thing we have to accept is that action is always happening. This is a firm point in Bhagavad Gita. Everyone has to act. You cannot stop acting. Krishna says it. Nahi kaschit sharamapi jatu tishtyanti karmapit. Everyone must act. No one can stop acting even for a moment. That's the way it is. The soul is always active. Now, of course, in material life, the potency that's displayed is quite insignificant compared to the full potency of the soul. You know that the Upanishads and the Srimad Bhagavatam describe the soul, how small it is. 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. That is just to give you an idea that it is invisible. You cannot measure spiritual things with material instruments. Just like when the Bhagavatam explains that the spiritual world is 3 times the size of the material world. Also, that's to give you an idea. You can't calculate spiritual things in terms of dimension, whether it's the spirit soul or the spiritual world. So, our body is powered by the spirit soul, and you're only seeing a small display of the energy of the soul. You're not seeing the full glories of the spirit soul. This is a perverted, shadowy existence we have in the material world. We're so attached to it now, and it's perverted and shadowy. Now, because the soul is always active in its original condition, it's also always active in the material existence. You see, actually, material existence does not touch the soul. You simply dream that there's a contact. And because you are attached to that dream, you artificially suffer. So, there's no way you can get away from activities. Even impersonalists, they cannot escape activity. Temporarily, they may artificially act like they're not going to be active, but that can only last for a short time. Just like if I take a hammer and hit you over the head and you go unconscious. Well, that doesn't mean you're inactive. It just means temporarily you're out of it. It doesn't mean that for the whole duration you're inactive. No, it just means you've been artificially put out of action. But still, your nature is to be active. So impersonalists, why is it that they cannot understand the essential activeness of the soul? Who can say?
Is it not sort of surrendered enough?
No. They find that activity in the material world brings the very sensitive.
Yes, they speculate. Activities have brought us pain, therefore perfection must mean no activity. This is just an intellectual adjustment. It has nothing to do with spiritual reality. So, this is why impersonal liberation, which is very rarely gotten these days in the first place, it's just temporary. It's like being in, how many of you have been in the transit lounge in the airport, going for one class? you're flying international and you're changing flights, you have a transit route. Well, that's what impersonal liberation is like. You're not meant to stay there. You've either got to go back to the material world or forward to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, but you can't stay in the in-between zone. Impersonalists, they're attracted, they think, by this neutral zone. Very few of them actually attain it, and those that do can't stay there because the soul is active. So Bhagavad Gita deals with this action right away. That's why it's on the cover. Action. Spoken on a battlefield. You can't think of a more active place than a battlefield. The whole point of Bhagavad Gita is dealing with this action. The first verse says what? Dharma shesha kuru shesha. Samaveda. What are they doing out there on the battlefield? Dhritarashtra asked his secretary, Sanjaya. What are they going to do? How are they acting? Are they going to fight? Are they going to try to make peace? What's going on? So from the very first verse of Bhagavad Gita, you're dealing with action. Sometimes I notice, because Bhagavad Gita is so incisive and so essential, you overlook how important it is, how it captures everything in these 18 chapters, because it's so incisive, it's so germane, or it's so essential, it's the kernel of everything. So, when you want to understand the heart of existence, then you read Bhagavad Gita. Understanding that you're coming to grips with action, and that you have to act. Now, it's amazing how people can act without knowledge. Is anybody here? Did you ever find that crazy? Did you ever think, how can people act without understanding what's going on, what the system is that they're part of? Did you ever think about that? When you think about it, it's madness. This is the result of the modes of material nature. Due to passionate and ignorant lifestyles, we can't see what's going on, and we don't care. These are the effects of sinful activity. People think, oh, you can do whatever you like, it doesn't matter. But you can see the effects. What are the effects? That even though you don't know, you don't care. This is the effect of consorting with the illusory energy. If you can only see that much, at least understand that. You don't get away free by consorting with the material energy. You lose your brains in the process. You know, when you get on the bus, you put some money in, you give it to the driver. You give it to the driver. So your money is the fare you pay to ride on the bus. Now, what is the fare you pay to ride on the bus of Maya? You hand your brains over. Yeah. Okay, here's my brains and my intelligence, and then you may sit down in ignorance. So this is what we've done in our material life. We voluntarily accepted to live without brains. And our foolishness is we can't see this as the direct product of our actions. We're just lost. We have no idea what the standard is of behavior, and we don't care because of our horrendous activity. But because everybody is acting that way, we feel some sense of false security. Well, anyway, who knows? No one's certain. So we'll all just act like that. It's like a bunch of sheep. We've discussed so many times. The sheep in the finishing pastures, the lambs, the special pastures they have for lambs that are going to be slaughtered. With, you know, the Swedes planted in a row. Row after row, very luscious greens, and all the lambs are just in ecstasy eating those greens, not understanding that they're being fattened to be finished. Now suppose you go. Everyone has seen these special finishing pastures where lambs are feeding in order to be slaughtered. You've all seen them. You have?
I haven't noticed them yet.
So, what happens if you go to one of these special fields and tell the lambs, leave, leave, you're going to be slaughtered? What good will it do? They don't care. They can't understand. And besides, they've got those luscious salad greens. And they're just gorging themselves. You can see the smile on their face. And all the bigger sheep, they have to forage on the dry grass on the mountainsides and also to scrub. Whereas these sheep that are going to be finished, they get the special. They get the special crops. Now suppose you go and say, oh, please, my dear lambs, get out of here. You're going to be slaughtered. They won't care. Try it. You can see, because compared to the lamb, you have higher knowledge. You can understand this lamb is being fattened for the slaughter. But the lambs don't understand that. They're totally preoccupied with eating their special food they get before they kill. So we can understand that about the lambs, but can we understand that about ourselves? We're just as ignorant as the lambs. We don't know why we're here. We don't know who we are, and we don't care. Yet still, we're active. You see, this is the thing. Even though we're ignorant, we're still acting. Why is that? An intelligent person would think, since I have no idea what I'm doing, let me just not do anything. But you'll notice you can't. You can't do that. Just try not doing anything. Have any of you tried that? Have you tried to not do anything? Anyone here tried that? How long did it last? How long did it last?
I'm still doing it.
Not true.
Well,
anyway. Anyone else? You tried not doing anything?
No.
Yeah, you can't. You have to do something. You have to move about. You have to eat, sleep. And that involves acquiring things. That involves interacting with other people, interacting with the world. So, how can you stop acting? You have things that are pushing your mind, things that are pushing your body. How can you avoid not acting towards those things? Not surrendering to those things. So everybody's acting, but the action is based on ignorance. And what do actions based on ignorance bring? More ignorance. It's one thing that breeds another. And that's why you feel trapped. You feel like you're in a bottomless pit. Because action based on ignorance brings about more ignorance. And you go on acting, and the ignorance simply increases. This is a trap of material existence. So Kate here, she works in at the university bookstore. Now, you see people coming in and out all day long. Now, have you ever wondered, what is it they actually know that's of value? There you are at the University of Auckland bookshop. People are coming in, buying books, looking at books. You've seen it there and there and there. Now, have you ever thought, what is it they actually know? What is it that they're actually learning?
People's theories and speculations.
And have you, what has it done for them?
I just look as confused as you are.
You can see that. She works in a bookshop, she can see. After buying so many books, they still look confused. When they come back, they try to sell their books.
And they haven't read them.
So this is the central problem of existence, of material existence. We have to act, as we discussed before you got here, because the soul is active. Therefore, even in material existence, which is a combination of the soul and matter, we have to act. You're not seeing the full potency of the soul, but still, there's no question of life possible without the soul and the body. So you have to act, you can't stop. Have you ever seen anybody not acting? Has anyone here seen someone not acting?
I once saw a picture of some guy, he was sitting in a lotus position for 45 days. He didn't move, he didn't speak, or eat, or drink, or go to the toilet, or anything.
So you assume he's not acting. Now, even if we accept what you say, that he did that for 45 days, still, it was how long was it?
45 days.
Then, what did he do?
Did he go up? Yeah.
So we already pointed out that it's possible to artificially stun yourself. But that's not the normal condition. You know, that's the exception that shows the rule. But actually, let's take it deeper. And Krishna will take that deeper in Bhagavad Gita. He's still acting, although he's physically inactive. He didn't stop breathing. His mind didn't stop moving. He's sitting somewhere in lotus position, right? Right? Now, suppose I come to your house, I'm a stranger, and I decide to sit down on your floor in the lotus position and be inactive in the middle of your house. And everybody, you know, from the neighborhood comes in and says, oh look, he's being inactive. How glorious. But here I am on the middle of your floor, sitting in the lotus position in your house. I'm there without asking you. I don't even care I'm in your house. I'm just being inactive. That's the real thing. What would you say about that?
I kind of wonder where you're coming from.
You're made a leave. Yeah. A stranger comes into your house, sits down on the floor in a lotus position. Inactive. No, you know, after a few minutes, you're going to wonder, like, well, you know, what the hell are you doing in my house, you know? You're in the middle of the floor there, you know? And suppose you have some neighbors, and they come in to see, and they say, Josh, don't bother him. He's inactive. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, after a while, you're going to say, hey, you know, this is my house. Who invited this guy in? So even, the point of the example is to show that even if we think we're some kind of yogi sitting in lotus position, not doing anything, still we're on somebody's property and we haven't asked. But we think, no need to ask where I am or who belongs, who everything belongs to. I'm inactive. No. And anyway, it doesn't last, even that so-called condition of inaction. It's very difficult to understand, but Krishna explains it easily. So we're going to discuss that tonight. Action, inaction. It's very necessary for you to grasp this point if you're going to rescue yourself from material existence. Of course, who wants to rescue themselves from material existence? Anybody? Anybody want that? No. What's wrong with the way things are? You find anything wrong with the way things are?
Getting rampant.
What's getting rampant?
Life. Why is life and people of business and things like that? Quite fast and volatile.
Yeah, isn't that what everybody wants, yeah? Fast, you know? Full on action. Isn't that what everybody wants? Is there something wrong with life the way it's lived now? What do you see as wrong?
Morality.
What's that mean, morality?
Not pure way of life, not a pure way of life.
What does that mean?
Not pure, not easy,
not sincere. Okay, still have it. Not sincere. I mean, what does that mean? Can you say what he's trying to say? Not moral. Not pure. Not sincere. What would you say is the problem with life today? You see, this is how deep we get into it. We know something's wrong and we can't even describe it. What would you say? It's wrong. Yeah. That's your name?
Daniel. We don't respect nature.
We don't respect nature. Now, how is it that you respect nature?
Just leave it as it is.
Leave it as it is. Don't breathe any air?
No.
Don't drink any water? Don't eat any food?
As life is disturbance as possible.
So what does that mean, though, as possible?
Whatever we need to live with it, but what is not necessary.
Well, you know, I need a car with a 4-liter engine. And I eat, Kentucky Fried Chicken on Friday, McDonald's on Saturday, and Pizza Hut on Sunday. So how do we just leave nature alone? Sounds like they're suggesting some kind of inactivity, inaction. But can't you see that you're, even just by your breathing and your drinking water, you're involved with nature? And Bhagavad Gita will explain that not simply is your physical body involved, but also your subtle body or your astral body is involved with nature. What you're saying is like, I'm going to live under the water without getting wet. That's why if you read these books, you'll find sentences like, you're implicated in material existence. What that word means? Implicated. You're caught up in it. You can't untangle yourself. You can't separate yourself from your involvement in nature. Let's leave nature alone. Now, you're breathing out carbon dioxide, you're taking in oxygen. So, are you saying then that we should kind of live like that? Just wear cloth around the waist and What do you want to eat? Just pull plants out of the ground or, or what? Who decides what's the minimum we need to live? Who decides that? What do you say? Who decides?
I don't know.
Hey,
not me.
But it sounds good to say just
each individual.
Right? Yeah, and that's what's going on now. Each individual is deciding. And each one thinks the other guy has too much. I have just enough, the other guy has too much. Everybody thinks like that.
Well, they think I don't have enough.
Have you ever seen anybody cutting back?
Yes. Sure.
Someone who is not aware of Krishna consciousness. So, my point is, you see, when we speak these things, we can see how they actually have no substance to them. Yeah. Morality, virtue, sincerity, leaving nature alone. And what does all this mean? It mainly means what we think it should mean. It's up to us. Yes, well, I think I'm sincere. I'm leaving nature alone. I'm moral. I'm a moral person. Isn't that the way it is, buddy? So this is why you have the situation you have now. Everybody decides they're their own judge. Everybody decides what action is, what inaction is, what the point of action is. And that can't be done. We don't have the qualifications to make those decisions. We're too tiny. That's what it means to be tiny. You can't lay down the law even on yourself. That's how tiny you are. That's how insignificant you are. Now, it's a big thing these days that you shouldn't judge anybody else. And you shouldn't try to impose your judgments on somebody else, your values on somebody else, right? But we take it further. In Krishna consciousness, we say you can't even judge yourself. You can't impose values on yourself. That sound radical? That's how tiny you are. That's how insignificant you are. You don't have the law-making ability. You don't have the ability to judge how things should be. Krishna is trying to convince you of that in Bhagavad Gita. You're not the standard. You can't be the standard. You're too tiny. You're too limited. That's why things are going wrong. You have tiny living entities trying to envision, trying to conceptualize, trying to think, what is the real standard? You can't do that. You don't have the potency. You don't have the ability. So that's why things are crazy these days. You got each individual trying to figure out what is morality, what is purity, what is sincerity, what is environmentally correct. And no one can see the whole picture. Do any of you have very young brothers or sisters? How old?
Four.
Now, will you go to your four-year-old and brother or sister and say, I'd like to hear how you see things. I'd like to understand what your standard is. No, you know the four-year-old kid doesn't know anything. How much of the world has a four-year-old kid experienced? But what makes us any different? We're just babbling in a more intelligent way, but we're still babbling just like a four-year-old kid. Four-year-old kids, what do they live for?
food.
Food. Their senses. They live for their senses. And what do adults live for? Their senses. So what's the difference? What do the adults know that the four-year-old doesn't know?
How to explain to me this.
But it's still the same thing. That's the point. It's still the same thing. It's not simply the four-year-olds also, the adults. What do they know that the animals don't know? So when we actually cut through material existence, we find it's quite boring, quite simple, quite humdrum. It's just spirit souls trapped in material bodies, trying to satisfy their senses while living in ignorance. So how many of you have wondered what's going on? Have you wondered that? Sometimes, right? Have you wondered that, Daniel? But not all the time you think you're wondering, right? You're not wondering all the time, are you? No, because most of the time, you're doing things, right? Most of the time, you're hoping you're going to get something for your senses. No one sits around just wondering all the time. Especially when you think you're going to have some fun, you're going to do something that you're really going to enjoy, then you stop wondering. The way things work, it's generally only when you are frustrated that you start wondering. Is it a bit warm in here? Is enough air in here? Can we do with some more air? Well, that'll make it too cold. Open it a little bit, please. So let's go back to our central point. We are active all the time. We wonder a small percentage of the time, and mainly we just don't care. I mean, who really cares if they don't know? Do you really care if you don't know? Not that much, right? I mean, do you really care that you haven't figured the whole system out of life?
No, not really.
Yeah. Why not? Make the best of it as you can, right?
You'd be thinking pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm just figuring it out.
Yeah, and you just can't think all the time. You gotta let the senses loose, right? What about you? Do you care that, you know, do you really care that you haven't figured out the whole system of life?
No, I can't.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to figure out that one my whole lifetime, whether I live for 100 years and stay up for 24 hours or
something. And so, since you can't figure it out on your own, it's best just to what?
Leg it.
And? I could have got a better answer if I think. What about you, Jen?
I didn't understand.
Do you really care that you don't understand the whole system of life? But how? Okay, if you don't mind. You know, generally when you ask somebody, do you care? Of course, they say, yes, I care. That's the real honest I can. Now, so therefore, just like if you say you care for your little brother, we'd expect to see actions that show that you care. It's like people who are supposedly in love, they're always trying to show another that they really care, supposedly. Now, how do you show that you care about trying to understand the whole system of life? Well, then, we have to take it that means what?
He doesn't.
Right, he doesn't care. Yeah. It's like, you know, let's say you have a friend, you're telling everybody, I really care for my friend. And they say, well, when's the last time you saw your friend? Oh, about 25 years ago. When's the last time you called your friend up? 25 years ago. When's the last time you wrote your friend? 25 years ago. You know. Now you can understand why society is the way it is. you have no one to blame but yourself. Just to relieve us of this crazy situation, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. The action book, as we were discussing before, some of you came, takes place on the battlefield, immediately focuses on what is action, what's the point of it all. You have to act. Now, how do you act in the best way? So let's read some verses from Bhagavad Gita. Do we have any more books? We'll look at the verse, text 16, and we're going to go to 17, 18, so on and so forth. Page 242. Kim karma kim akarme ti kabayo yaptilamodhitaha chakte karma pavakshami yajyatya mokshashe shubhat. Read the translation, someone.
Even the intelligent are bewildered in determining what is action and what is inaction. Now I shall explain to you what action is, knowing which you shall be liberated from all misfortune.
So Krishna is telling you, even intelligent people get bewildered about what we're discussing, so don't feel too bad. Then Krishna says, I shall explain to you what action is, knowing which you shall be liberated from all misfortune. Now, who wants to be liberated from misfortune? Anyone? If someone said to you, you want to be liberated from misfortune, what would you say? When you ask, what is misfortune?
Yeah, what is misfortune?
So, okay. So, and if someone asks you, well, you decide what the misfortune is. You tell me what misfortune is. What would you say? What misfortune is?
Not eating.
These are things that our four-legged friends do, you know? Breathe, eat, alive. Is there anything special, especially for humans, that's misfortune? Yes, that is a great misfortune. And someone said to you, I shall explain how you can be liberated from all misfortune. What would you say?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
If someone said to you, I'm going to explain to you how you can become free from all misfortune. What would you say?
Explain.
Do you think you must mean like more money or something? What would you take to mean misfortune? What would you take that to mean?
Misfortune.
He said eating, breathing. I just pointed out to him that those things the animals we do. Nothing special human about that.
What could be misfortune to me?
Yeah.
Maybe my death.
Hmm?
Maybe my death.
Hmm.
Loved one's death.
Yeah. Now what are you going to do about that?
I'm still alive.
How long?
As long as possible. Hopefully.
Hopefully what?
Hopefully. For not hopefully for as long as possible.
How long is that?
I'm too sure. Sure at
all. If you made it to what age, folks, what age of dying would you think would be satisfying? So when you reach 100, then you'll be ready to go.
I'll probably not be ready to go,
but
I'll not be ready to go, but hopefully I'll get there.
So what's the difference between dying at 100 and dying the next year?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
I hope, experience more things in my life.
So when you get to be 100, you'll say, I've experienced enough, now let me die.
I don't get it. Because that section isn't red, I just thought.
Yeah, so?
Yeah.
So what to do? You're right. The misfortune is you don't want to die, yet death is forced on you. A human being thinks like that. An animal can. An animal breathes and eats, mates, fights, but only a human being can think, I don't want to die. I'm going to die. The animals don't think like that. If you go to some lambs that are being fattened for slaughter and tell them, don't eat, the fatter you get, you know, the quicker you're going to be slaughtered, you know. Well, the lambs aren't going to listen, they're just going to keep eating and eating and eating. But humans should be able to understand, I'm going to die, I don't want this. The lambs don't understand until right before they're killed in the slaughterhouse. Some animals that are being slaughtered, they're having sex right in the slaughterhouse yard, you know, right up, finally when they go up the ramp. And then they start to understand. And they get to the top of the ramp, where the guy's waiting with something he sticks in their throat. Then they, right before then, they understand. Otherwise, they don't. So you see, unless human beings can act like human beings, that means unless they understand what is misfortune, everything is a mystery for them. They just live like animals. Yes, right? Doesn't it seem obvious that action means when you're moving about, and inaction means when you're not moving about, right? That seems obvious, right? We're talking about action and inaction. Now, it doesn't seem to be a big deal, does it? Action means moving about, right?
Yeah,
inaction means you're just sitting still. Why does Krishna say here, even the intelligent are bewildered about what is action and inaction? Must be something more to it. Alright, let's go to the next verse, text 17. We have a book for the fine ladies here. Dignitaries, excuse me, dignitaries. Text 17. Kamana yapi bodhavyam, bodhavyam shabda kamana, akamana shabodhavyam, gada kamana gati.
Yes.
to read the translation? Daniel.
The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what is action, what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is.
Mm. We'd like to read the purport. Now notice, before we read the purport, Krishna once again says it's very hard to understand. Now once again, we're thinking, what's the big deal? When you're active, you're doing things. When you're inactive, you're not doing things. Why does Krishna say, for the second verse in a row, even in intelligent persons, the intricacies are hard to understand? There must be a lot going on in life that we don't know about. And that's the whole point of Bhagavad Gita, to deal with this action. Because we all are acting, yet we have no idea why, what the system is, what I'm part of. And as we discussed before you all got here, no one really cares. Everyone just thinks, now, no one knows for sure, or I'd like to know, but I don't now, but anyway, I got to kind of do what I got to do, try to please my senses somehow or other. Okay, who's going to read the purport? Kate?
One is serious about liberation from material bondage. One has to understand the distinction between action, inaction, and unauthorized action. One has to apply oneself to such an analysis of action, reaction, and perverted action, because it is a very difficult subject matter. To understand Krishna consciousness and action according to its merits, one has to learn one's relationship with the Supreme. I.e., one who has learned perfectly knows that every living entity is an eternal servitor of the Lord, and that consequently one has to act in Krishna consciousness. The entire Bhagavad Gita is directed towards this conclusion. Any other conclusions against this consciousness and its attendant actions are reclaimers or prohibitive actions. To understand all this, one has to associate with the authorities in Krishna consciousness and learn separate from them. This is as good as learning from the Lord directly. Otherwise, even the most intelligent persons will be deluded.
Now, you notice, the first line of the purport says, if one is serious about liberation from material bondage. Now, just think about that. Liberation from material bondage. Kind of a mouthful, you know? Has anyone actually ever considered liberation from material bondage? Have you ever considered that?
No.
Yeah. You like this
one?
Liberation from material bondage. You never thought about that, right? Are you? Well, if you say if you did, say yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, you thought about liberation from material bondage?
When I read these things,
that's why we have these books to make people to start thinking. And you?
When I'm not feeling not happy, then I think I'm better. I
better you left?
But I don't like anymore this life.
Yeah.
But only when I feel unhappy.
Yeah.
When I feel happy again.
And let the good times roll.
Changing all the time.
Yes. This is the nature of the mind in material existence. The Sanskrit words for this are called sankalpa vikalpa, acceptance and rejection. The mind, if you watch your mind, has anyone ever studied their mind, how it moves? You must have done that. It's always accepting and rejecting. One minute the mind says, oh, I like this. The next minute, the very same thing, it says, I don't like it. You meet somebody on Saturday, oh, so fascinating, so nice. Sunday, how in the world would I ever, you know, hang out with that person? This is the mind. Now, maybe it doesn't happen immediately, maybe it happens over many years, but still, the mind always accepting and rejecting. Constantly analyzing during the day. Is this good? Is this bad? Do I like it? I don't like it? Is it making me feel good? Is it not making me feel good? All the time. People get so tired of that, that's why they go get drunk. They just want to, you know, dull the mind. And if I can just dull this mind, then I can really have a good time. Because they have no understanding how to use the mind for higher spiritual attainment. They think, let me just get drunk, and they don't have to think so much, and then pleasure will naturally flow. This is all because they don't know how to use their mind and intelligence for higher attainment. What is material bondage? I had to ask you what material bondage is.
Something that you need material bondage. And possibly you don't need it.
So why would you think that you need material things for happiness? There must be something, a mistake underneath that. The shackles of a situation must be underneath what you're talking about. Why would you think that you need material things to be happy? I take it.
When you start studying something like that,
Well,
until it occurs to you that material things don't make you happy, most people in the world buy into that.
But still, the real shackles, the chains are underneath what you're saying. Why would you think that material things would make you happy? You can grasp this, and you've got your fingers on what material bondage is. You've got your hands on the knot, K-N-O-T, of material existence. And you can bring up your axe and be prepared to cut the knot. First you have to see that knot.
If you haven't attained full spiritual knowledge, you haven't got the bliss,
the crux of the situation. Why would you look elsewhere? There's a fundamental mistake. And you see, she's warm, but there's something underneath there. She's done well. She comes to her life. So she's warm, but she's not quite boiling. She's not, you know, she's almost there, not quite. There's one layer more she's got to penetrate to. What do you say?
Is it that we listen to where our mind's going
through? Oh, no. We're getting away now. Yeah. You just had one more step to make, and you had it. You got it right in your hand. Material bondage. Why would you think the material things are meant to make you happy? And why would you, instead of pursuing spiritual things, whatever they are, instead of pursuing the spiritual bliss, why would you pursue matter, as I think you're saying?
It's hard for me to go back and think, because now I'm quite convinced that material things don't bring me happiness. So for me to go on the other side of the argument,
to
some degree, surely it's a necessity.
Why is that? Why is there that necessity?
Because we will be walking here and we'll be naked, isn't it? Am I getting away from it now?
Yeah, everybody always gives this argument against taking up spiritual development. Oh, you know, you have to be practical. As if being ignorant of who you are is practical. As if acting out of complete ignorance is practical. Underneath what she's saying, why we think that matter will make us happy, why we think material things will make us happy, is because there's a fundamental mistake. We think, I am matter. Therefore, we look to matter for our satisfaction. We think, I am this body, I am this mind. That's the basic problem. That's the knot, the hard knot, which you have to chop. So, liberation from material bondage, first of all, means to cut that knot, to no longer identify as matter. In material existence, we're like fish out of water. You can put the fish onto the land and give the fish fancy cars, you know, home entertainment systems, this, that, the works. But what's it going to do for the fish? The fish is supposed to be in the water. So all our problems are based on thinking, I'm the body and mind. Therefore, I should try to be happy with things that please the body and the mind. I told you, I got a way you're really going to be happy. All you have to do is stand under that light bulb there. Just all night long, jump up trying to touch your head to the light bulb. You look at me like, you gotta be kidding me, you're nuts. What's me jumping up trying to touch my head to the light bulb all night? What's that got to do with my happiness? You say like that, but at the same time, we don't see how it's just as ridiculous to think, I am this body, I am this mind, material things will make me happy. Now the problem is that even when we talk that blind spirit, we actually have no knowledge how spirit acts. Therefore we end up doing the same thing as everybody else. That's why Krishna is saying in these verses, the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. We're starting now to get a lesson in what karma is about. If you could read the Sanskrit, you see that forbidden action is called vikarma. Inaction is called akarma. And then regular action is called karma. Now, what are these three things? Karma just doesn't mean any kind of activity. No, it means activity in line with the system. Whose system? That you have to find out. Just like there's a system of law for New Zealand, similarly there is a system of law for the universe. We've got to find that out. That's our responsibility. You can't plead ignorance of the law. If you go smashing storefront windows on Broadway and then the police arrest you, take you to court, and you tell the judge, I didn't know it was against the law. No one will listen. Similarly, there are laws of the universe. And we're meant to find those out because we have human intelligence. Is that window open? We have human intelligence. Unlike the animals, we can think, what's the system? So karma means activities according to the system. Good deeds, but not good deeds according to what we think. Good deeds according to the owner and creator of the system. Because if we ask each one of you, you'll all say, yeah, I think I'm good. I think I'm being sincere. You'll say that. Yeah. If you're asked to evaluate your own life, you'll think you're kind of a sincere guy, right? You'll think you're all right, right? Yeah. You don't say so yourself, right? Everybody here, you basically think you're all right? You think you're basically all right, right, Daniel?
I'm a serious guy who's trying to make it real.
You would say that, right? Mm-hmm. What would you say about yourself? Not bad, right?
Well, I think I'm not very serious. But I don't change.
That's just your humility, right?
Yeah.
I think so. That's what we think. Yeah, there's something good about us, you know. We're not too bad.
even when we think, well, I'm not really serious, we think, but I'm, at least I'm humble about it. You notice how, what are we doing here? What's the mistake we're making? Is that it? You avoid yourself. Probably, as Bhagavad Gita explains, we have to learn to discriminate between the false self and the real self. But you can't avoid yourself. You have to know what to do with yourself. So that's why Krishna is speaking here. The intricacies of action. You have to know what is proper action, what is forbidden action, and what inaction is. So we already described what karma is. Action in accordance with the system. But the problem that we were all doing, which you should be educated to see, we were all judging ourselves. Which is supposed to be quite all right these days. I think we discussed that before you came. You're not supposed to judge anybody else, but it's okay to judge yourself. But what Krishna is teaching you in Bhagavad Gita is you can't judge others and you can't judge yourself. Radical, huh? Very radical. You're too tiny. You're too insignificant. You both have had children, huh? When your baby was 4 years old, would you want your baby to judge himself or herself? Would you take that seriously? Why not?
Inexperienced.
But what do the adults know that more than the child? It makes them capable of judging the child. The adults have no knowledge. What's the experience of the adults? They don't know anything. The whole point is, unless you understand the whole system, you have to keep your mouth shut. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is trying to give you knowledge of the whole system. You can't do that. And that was the source of your frustration. You can't figure out the whole system on your own. You're just so tiny. It's beyond you. So if you're going to understand what proper action is and what forbidden action is, you've got to take it from the source. Don't worry about it. Eat, sleep, make merry, and die. Just like the lambs being fattened from the slaughter. But if you're a human being, the Vedic conclusion is that a human being must be concerned with these things. So there is a system for proper behavior. That's called karma. And then there are violations of that system. And then there are activities which are beyond the system of karma. That is what Krishna is calling inactivity. That's why Krishna said it's difficult. Inactivity doesn't mean not doing anything. You must do something. Inactivity means no karmic results from what you're doing, even though you are active. Now bear in mind, what's the situation in Bhagavad Gita? It's a battlefield. Arjuna has to fight in a war. So Krishna is telling him that even an activity like fighting can be done so there's no karmic result. It's still inaction. Well, that's pretty revolutionary, isn't it? When the meter maids, or the, what do you call them, meter maids, when they go around giving tickets, sticking them on your windscreen. Is that the action of a private person? No. They're acting as representatives of the system.
It's not something they're just doing on their own. They're functioning as part of the system. So similarly, there's a way of acting in life as a whole so that we're functioning as parts of the system. And that way, we don't get any reaction, good or bad. No good karma, no bad karma. That is what Krishna calls inactivity. So let's look at text 18. We'll find out more about this. Very fascinating Sunday matter. If you can capture this, you're well on your way to understanding the heart of Bhagavad Gita. Kamanya karmaya pasyed akamanya karmaya sabhuriman manusheshu sayata krishna karmate. Jason, you read the translation? Gosh.
One receives inaction and action and inaction is intelligent among you, and he is in the transcendental position, while engaged in all sorts of activities.
Interesting. One receives inaction and action, and action and inaction. Is this some kind of word juggling or what? What do you think? Is this, you know, sometimes people think that spiritual truth is just like saying witty things like, those who know don't say, those who say don't know. Is this one of these kind of things? What's Krishna talking about here? What do you think? Oh, very good. Do you have any preliminary, Anyone want to speculate a bit?
Inaction is when you don't make a bad karma or karma when you act in Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
You act inaction.
Yes. And in other words, Krishna is saying, one who sees inaction, inaction. That means Arjuna, he's fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra under Krishna's personal direction. Although he's so active, it's inaction. It's got nothing to do with good or bad karma. He's functioning as a representative of the system. It's like the meter maid. When she sticks something under your windshield wiper, you just know, you know, she's just doing what the system says. But if anybody else comes along and sticks something under your windshield wiper, hey, what are you doing? Put that junk on my car. Because you don't feel like put adverts under your windshield. Then you get mad. Ah, put this junk under my windscreen wiper. When the meter maid does it, you don't like it, but still you know, she's functioning as part of the system. So Arjuna is doing bhakti yoga. His actions are performed out of love and devotion for Krishna, the source of everything. Therefore, there's no karma. Though he's so active on the battlefield, he's classified as inaction. He gets nothing out of it in the individual materialistic sense. I'll give a better example. It's like when you water a plant at the root, then all the branches blossom. But if you try to water each leaf individually, anyone who has a plant knows you don't water each leaf individually, but water the root. So Arjuna is demonstrating Krishna consciousness. Give all his energies and efforts to Krishna as directed by Krishna. Then there's no reaction. This position is beyond even material righteousness and piety, doing good, as ordinarily understood. So it's called inaction, even though there's so many activities. It's lost. It's inaction. For those who work here, it's not good karma, it's not bad karma, it's inaction. It's bhakti yoga. Loving service rendered to Krishna, because the science of Krishna is being taught. It's not anything someone's doing for themselves. So although they're so active, you can hear them in there cooking, it's inaction. Inaction. Now someone else right now may be at their house, just laying on their couch, meditating on the void, whatever that is. But what does Bhagavad Gita say about that? That is action. Do you understand? Why is that considered action? Yes? You're conceiving of yourself as separate from the system, and you're doing your own thing, even when you think you're inactive. Anyway, you're still active. Your heart's beating, you're breathing, you're breathing out carbon monoxide, you're breathing in, your mind's moving like anything. Even from that sense also there's action. You missed the example we gave in the beginning. Suppose you don't know me, and I don't know you, but I come to your house and without asking I just march into your house, sit down in the middle of your living room here? Yeah. Living room. Sit cross-legged in lotus position. Perfectly still. What would you say about that? You didn't know me, I didn't know you. Without permission, I just march into your house. Sit down in the middle of your living room. The lotus position. Meditating on the void. Making my mind empty. Making my mind still. What would you say about that? But I'm inactive! So that's what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. This universe doesn't belong to you. So even when you want to sit in a lotus position and say, oh, just see, I'm inactive, Krishna says, well, you know, this is not your house. Whether you're active or inactive, it's all action. It's all considered karma because you haven't consulted what's the personal way I like things to go on. How I like things to go on. Just like you said, hey, you can take your inactivity somewhere else. This is my house. I got plans for my house. So when Krishna speaks like that in Bhagavad Gita, what do we say? Dogma. When you say like that,
well, then it's all right, right? Take your inactivity somewhere else. It's my house.
Everybody can understand. So you, tiny you, can lay claim to your house. But if Krishna lays claim to all the cosmic manifestation, this is just authoritarian, this is just whatever. You see? How much of a cheater we are? We're so anxious to assert proprietorship over our tiny, measly existence. But we're no way interested in finding out about a supreme provider. No way. So let's remember this verse. One who sees inaction in action, and action in inaction is intelligent among men, and he's in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. Would you like to read that purport? Would you like to read that purport?
A person acting on Krishna consciousness is naturally free from the bounds of karma. His activities are all performed for Krishna. Therefore, he does not enjoy or suffer any results of work. Consequently, he is intelligent and human society. Even though he is engaged in all sorts of activities for Krishna, the karma means without reaction to work. Frequent activities out of fear, so that the resultant action may not be the sending God on the path of self-realization, but the person knows rightly his position as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness. because everything is done for Krishna, he enjoys only transcendental happiness and is about sales of the service. Those who are engaged in this process are known to be without desire for personal self-certification. The sense of eternal servitorship to Krishna acts on a mean to all sorts of the three elements of work.
Okay. I give a final example. Some of you have heard it before. Shri Prabhupada will give this example. You're walking down Broadway and you see $50 notes on the street. Now what would you do? Yeah, and then?
Try to analyze what is false, what is real.
They're always trying to analyze, this is matter, this is spirit, as if their brains are big enough that they can figure everything out on their own. What is the illusion? Is it all an illusion? Is it all a dream? Or is it all spiritual? You probably met people like that.
Huh? Yes.
Okay. So they would look at the money and they would just keep on walking. It's just illusion. It's just temporary. It's just matter. It's just... I don't even know if I'm really seeing what's there. It's probably just a dream. I'm a dream. It's a dream. They just keep walking. So obviously, both of those first two approaches are wrong. Not correct. What is the best thing to do? To pick up the money and without spending it on yourself or what you think is a good cause, find the owner. Now it's very, you still don't get off the hook. It's very nice to say you're going to find the owner and, you know, good and bad, you've got no knowledge of the owner and no chance of finding out who the real owner is. Which means after a while you're just going to give up and what? And what?
Become a farmer.
Oh, you spend on yourself, you know? You'll find a good cause, either yourself or some charity, which is karma. So, in other words, we're just deceiving ourselves. Well, I would pick it up and I would try to find out who it belongs to. I'd go into some shops. I would ask and... you know good and well, you're not going to find out because you just don't have that kind of knowledge. So this shows that simple good sentiment, wanting to do good without knowledge, won't get you far. But as a human being, you must get knowledge. Now, the third class of person is called the bhakta, the Krishna conscious person. The Krishna conscious person knows who things belong to. So the Krishna conscious person is always acting to use things for the pleasure of the person that everything belongs to. It's not just a matter of sentiment. Oh, let's find out who it belongs to. We don't know, but anyway, let's find out. Then when we get tired, we'll just do like everybody else. But no, you have to know. You have to have knowledge of who the energies of this world belong to. Then when you use the energies of this world according to the direction of the energetic source, then there's no karma, good or bad. So much so that Arjuna can fight in a battle and not get any karmic reaction. That is inaction, although Arjuna is fighting. And you can't imagine a more active situation than the battlefield. Still, it's called inaction, no action. Whereas someone who's so-called sitting in a lotus position for 45 days even, as Josh said, still that's considered action. Is this understood by everybody? Any questions about this?
Yes, what's the doctor person going to do with the $50?
Use it for Krishna. But that means you have to know about Krishna and know what Krishna wants.
Let's see.
Yes, I have questions. We're supposed to know all these things. 1 year ago.
What was it? 1 year?
Yeah, 1 year ago.
You know.
I guess. Now you're a prime example of that. Remember anyone 1 year ago? Sounds good. Anyone here remember Clayton 1 year ago? Amazing transformation, right? Who was studying art at ASA, you know? You know, so just some excuse just to, you know, ASA is basically an excuse just to keep people busy for a couple of years, right? He didn't know what to do with himself. Now he's a man of knowledge. Purity, morality, sincerity. But if you ask him to explain those things, he can explain what those things are. But you see, as long as you see yourself separate from Krishna's system, these words have no meaning. Everybody just makes up their own meaning. Just like you want to make up your own law for often, you can try, but it won't get you very far. After you leave here, go out in the middle of the street on Broadway and announce, what's your name here?
Mahendra.
Mahendra. I'm Mahendra! I hereby say all the traffic on Broadway should go the opposite way! What will happen to you?
People probably come out running after
me. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But when it comes to your life, that's another thing, right? Then you can say, oh, I'm Mahendra. I'm doing what I think is good. I'm doing my thing. Okay? But it's just as ridiculous. From the Vedic point of view, it's just as ridiculous. Can you see that? At least theoretically. Alright, we've covered a lot of ground tonight. If you can start thinking about this point, you've really gotten quite far. Think, Daniel? Some points to consider? And you? What's your name?
Valerie.
Valerie?
Mm-hmm.
So, some points, some good points for you to think about? Some good points do you think of that?
Yeah, to spend more time to realize which way I like to go in my life.
But just remember what I just told Mahendra here.